This seemed to relieve the pressure on Arago, but a petition was actually introduced in the State Assembly that would set up a special commission to defend Arago from the foreigner CTM and prevent him from leaving the country. There was no let-up from the pressure of the media group. Although considerable data had already been gathered, it was still inadequate for a complete study. Yet it was impossible to continue. At a meeting to deal with the problem, the consensus was that the only practical thing to do was to make a thorough analysis of the material already in hand, and to help a team of Brazilian doctors set up a similar study that could be done quietly, out of the glaring floodlights of publicity. Now that the Minas Gerais Medical Society seemed to be shifting its position, this plan might turn out to be a viable alternative. With doctors in residence in Brazil, the privacy of the research would be more likely. Further, plans were already taking shape under the aegis of several Brazilian doctors to build a hospital in Congonhas, where permission would be obtained to have Arago continue his work under the direct supervision of the Brazilian medical men. If there had been some way to foster this type of project at the time of the first court process, perhaps some real clue to Arago or TMS rare effectiveness would have already been available. It was with a great deal of frustration and regret that the 190 North American Research Group closed down their project at Congonhas. But there seemed to be no other answer. The reporters had even tried to storm Arago or TMS house. The work could have perhaps continued if the situation had not affected Arago himself so acutely. He found it almost impossible to concentrate under the conditions, and became seriously concerned for the welfare of his patients. Even with incomplete data, however, considerable information could emerge from the analysis of the material. There was, for instance, the case of a 6-year-old girl, Maria Cristina Faleiro, of Rua Januaria 304A-13, Ines A. Tilda Pando Paulo. Her medical history showed that a diagnosis of leukemia was first made by her physician in S. A. Tilda Pando Paulo in March 1968. At this time, her white cell count had soared to 75,000, about 10 times the count considered as normal. The prognosis given by her physician was grave. The girl had been brought by her parents to Arago on May 20, 1968. She had been given a prescription by him at that time, and began taking it on May 22. She was riddled with the fatal disease, with the leukocytes A, the white blood cells A, running out of control, and the lymphoid tissue of the glands and bone marrow enlarged and proliferated. Returning to S. A. Tilda Pando Paulo from Congonhas, the parents of the girl had found their own doctor willing to cooperate in administering Arago a TMS prescription, since he could find no rational way to retard the case in conventional therapy. He had held out little hope, however. He administered the drugs, and watched the girl carefully. The key to any progress would lie in the telltale white cell count. This he took at regular intervals. By June 18, the count had dropped from 75,000 to 20,000, about 12,000 above normal. It was a startling, unbelievable drop. By June 5, less than a month later, the white cell count had plunged to 10,000. By August 7, it was down to a normal 7,500, and the glandular system of the girl had returned to normal. A follow-up by the doctor half a year later showed that the white cell count remained within normal limits, and the glands were also normal, a condition which the Americans verified. Another leukemia case studied by the North American 191 researchers was equally dramatic. The patient was 2-year-old Rosanna Canagos Ribra, Rua Valdecana 52, Congonhas. The medical history showed that the baby girl had developed acute fulminating leukemia in April 1967, about a year before the American researchers arrived. Within 3 weeks after the onset of the symptoms, the child's TMS glands, both external and internal, swelled massively. A month after her condition had been diagnosed, the glands in the abdominal cavity swelled to such an extent that they caused gangrene of the intestines, peritonitis. They further ruptured the abdominal wall with exudation of pus. Rosanna was rushed to the hospital in Belo Horizonte. Her white cell count had risen to 110,000. Her fever skyrocketed, and she went into a coma. The doctors at the hospital conferred with the mother, and told her that Rosanna TM's case was terminal. She had at best a day or two of survival time left. They indicated that in the presence of leukemia, nothing whatever could be done to control the runaway peritonitis. The distraught mother refused to accept the verdict. As a last resort, she rushed Rosanna back to Congonhas on May 19, 1967, to Arrigo. Because of the severity of the crisis, Arrigo took immediate charge. He personally administered the chemotherapy, a practice he very rarely followed. He prepared a mixture of cortisone, potassium chloride, and purine ethol, an experimental Burroughs welcome drug for the repression of cancer that had never been found to help in leukemia. He mixed an enormous dose, 20 cc, of the drugs in a syringe, and injected the medication directly into the peritoneal cavity, a procedure that would never be considered proper in conventional medicine. He told the mother to stay close by the child, and to give her water by mouth for the next 24 hours. She was to bring her daughter back the next day. She did so. Arrigo examined the child, and said that she had passed the crisis stage. There were still gaping wounds in the abdomen, draining pus. But Arrigo did nothing to intervene. He told the mother that the wounds should be 192, allowed to drain, and to close naturally. Then he showed the mother how to grind up a mixture of 20 milligrams of metacortin, conventionally used for rheumatoid arthritis, 500 milligrams of potassium chloride, and 50 milligrams of 6-mercaptopurina, a rather dangerous experimental drug for leukemia, and mix it with milk, administering it every 8 hours for a month. To the physician, this is a startling, massive, and irrational combination. Under ordinary circumstances, it might even kill a child of 2. The amount of metacortin was a dosage that would be used for an adult 20 times the weight of Rosanna. But the mother religiously followed the directions. The child began showing dramatic improvement. By the second week, the abdominal wounds had stopped draining pus and were beginning to heal. Within a month, Rosanna was afebrile, without fever, and the glandular swelling had disappeared. She was able to follow a normal liquid diet. Arrigo again examined the child, and said the same treatment should be continued for another month, at half strength. He asked the mother to get another blood count. She did so. The white cells had fallen from the original count of 110,000 to 12,000. By the end of the second month, the count had dropped to 7,000. On May 20, 1968, almost a year to the day after Rosanna had first been brought to Arrigo, the American doctors examined the girl and her medical history carefully. The white cell count was 6,700. Her abdomen still bore massive scars. Aside from that, she was normal. There were many more leukemia cases with similar detailed documentation. In all of them, Arrigo stated that he simply did what other voice TM told him to do. He never took blood counts, but they were often available from the doctors for verification. Although the research project was abortive, there were scores of cases that had been recorded, and were to be followed up by the cooperating Brazilian doctors. There was also much work to be done on return to New York, assigning tapes to be transcribed and edited, making up a list of the Brazilian doctors for the follow-up, analyzing what went wrong on this trip, and how to avoid it in the future. 193, analyzing Arrigo TM's prescriptions, and, above all, planning a new expedition so that there would be minimum interference from the press. The ideal situation would be to bring Arrigo to the States, but this he finally would not consider. He felt he could not desert those who were depending on him, even temporarily. Because of this, the coordination of the research effort with the Brazilian medical men became of foremost importance. The key man in this regard was Dr. Ari Lex, the S.A. Pound O'Paolo physician who had first observed Arrigo 6 years before. With his cooperation, a meeting was set up in S.A. Pound O'Paolo between the American group and the interested Brazilian doctors. It was only through them that the plans for the dream Arago had always had are the building of a hospital in Congonhas, where he could work with them clear of any legal harassment they could be fulfilled. In fact, it became a major obsession with Arago, it filled his mind night and day. He knew he could not stop his work, in spite of the law or the church. But he also knew he could not survive another assault by the courts, or another term in prison. The meeting with the S.A. Tilda Poundo Paolo Medical Group was held on May 28, 1968, at the Art Museum in that city. It allowed ample room for discussion and speculation about Arago. From the point of view of most Brazilians at the meeting, the observations of Herculano Baez were among the most astute in trying to bridge the gap between the metaphysics and the material reality of Arago at TM's work. Dr. Pius' TM theory was that it was impossible to label Arago as a paranoid case, as some tried to do, when he was able to perform verifiable physical operations successfully. Arago at TM's detractors did everything they could to deny the reality of what they saw. But this was impossible to do in the face of facts, and Arago remained above their barbs, except on legal technicalities. Pius also felt that it was not TMT necessary to either accept or reject the bizarre concept of Dr. Fritz. Fritz could be explained in any number of ways, depending on the attitude of the observer. Fritz could be an element of mythology, of Arago at TM's unconscious, or of a clearly defined spirit personality, as the Kardecist spiritists believed. Whatever the truth, the fact is that it worked. It 194, was that simple. Dr. Pius was an intellectual Kardecist, and he believed in the reality of mediumship under certain conditions that were as disciplined as any informal psychology. Pius interviewed Arago in a trance state, so ostensibly it was Dr. Fritz who was speaking through Arago as a channel. In the session, the German-accented voice of Dr. Fritz indicated that he had been born in Munich, moved to Poland when he was 4 years old, studied medicine, became a fairly good doctor and surgeon, but made several bad mistakes. The voice claimed that he went to Estonia, where he lived from 1914 until his death in 1918. According to the voice, Dr. Fritz vowed before he died that he would continue his medical development after death, and return to cure as many people on Earth as he could, to make up for his earthly inadequacies. Attempts have been made by several students of Arago to check out these facts, but have been unsuccessful. In any event, the voice of Dr. Fritz speaking through the mediumship of Arago claimed that he had become part of a group of other deceased doctors who decided to help people as best they could in the name of Christ. Dr. Fritz at TM's voice claimed that he had studied Arago for over a decade before he felt that Arago was the ideal vehicle to carry out this work. At this point, Fritz continued, he was able to obtain perfect control of the medium Arago, so that he could perform surgical operations through him. Further, Dr. Fritz at TM's voice claimed, he served as a go-between for the other discarnate doctors in his group, each of whom had his own specialty. Dr. Pius asked no one to believe all this. The phenomenon of Arago stood alone without it. It is simply one way the Kardecspiritist might try to set up a theory, and it remained only a theory. But even the solid, hardcore rationalists were hard put to explain Arago without some kind of postulate that seemed to go off the paranormal Richter scale. An ophthalmologist of high standing, Dr. Sergio Val, was fascinated by what Arago could do in his field. His observations were important as the negative point of view 195, of a specialist. His statement was emphatic, and no ophthalmologist could do what Arago did in front of us. It is simply not possible to do an operation on the eye without previous study, preoperative preparation, full sterilization and antiseptic conditions, the quiet atmosphere of an operating room, and above all, complete anesthesia. It is literally impossible to understand how Arago does what he does, so swiftly and under the conditions he works in. He moves with no thought whatever. No one can explain this, and no one ever will at TM. Dr. Val had also spent considerable time studying hypnosis, and ruled that out as a factor. Dr. Eduardo Bass V, a nuclear physicist, offered his theory. Like John Lawrence, his feeling was that there was an analogy between Arago TMS work and pure physics. He used the spectrum as an example, where the visual sensory equipment peeks in its confined way at the universe through a tiny slit in the spectrum between 356 millimicrons on the ultraviolet end and some 2400 millimicrons on the infrared end. Light waves, or energy waves, move out to the infinitely small and the infinitely large in each direction, and our eyes do not perceive the rays on either side of the minuscule visual slit. Neither does our hearing extend beyond a tiny portion of the audio spectrum, with its own ultra waves. Dr. Bass's TMS concept was that Arago was pure ultra in all of his work, but it was something the ordinary mind just could not perceive. New studies exploring the human aura are just now beginning to be taken seriously with what is called Kirlian photography. Both Russian and American films show that more easily detectable and more brilliant auras emanate from the fingers of those who are considered to be psychic healers than from others. Since human cells, in the last analysis, are electromagnetic force fields, Dr. Carlos Cruz and Dr. Mauro Godoy felt this could be at the bottom of Arago TMS prowess. You could almost figure that this might have something to do with the soul of an atom, Dr. Godoy said. There seemed to be as many theories as there were people. One medium, who was also the technical of Minis 196, Tratoror, a large corporation in Brazil, tried to analyze the situation for journalist Reinaldo Cumanal. He said, "The phenomenon I see is not just a simple one by Dr. Fritz, but a group of spirits under his direction. The diagnosis is already made by this group by the time the patient steps up to Arago. A Dr. Fritz passes the consensus of the group along to him before Arago has a chance to look at the patient. The medical group around Dr. Fritz did not stop developing after they died. They only touched the surface of medical practice when they were alive. Their knowledgeability now has no limits. Not all mediums are possessed by their spirit guides. But when Arago is practicing, he is completely possessed by Dr. Fritz. He remembers little, if anything, afterward. His whole body is possessed. He is unconscious. His person becomes that of Dr. Fritz. A spiritism on the intellectual Cartesist plane is a science, a philosophy, and a religion. Many people do not understand that. It is a religion when thought of as trust and belief. It is a philosophy when it gives to man the power of kindness, love, and the practice of religion. It is a science when the other two elements combine to bring about the observable surgery and cures Arago causes. Both matter and spirit are energy forces. They are simply of different frequencies. They are not as far apart as might be thought. The spirit loses the shell of the body, as a caterpillar loses his cocoon, but the personality remains conscious and aware. To talk about the results of Arago is like talking about rain in a wet place. TMS, no question of the facts. Nobody who has studied or observed the man has any doubts. But Arago does not TMT create miracles. He is merely a vessel for a higher form of energy, which you could say is ultimately God-given TM. These concepts were interesting, but utterly useless for the medical researchers, who needed more statistical information on the hard, observable facts. It is one thing to be convinced by direct observation. It is another to articulate the facts in a form acceptable to the editors of a Scienti 197, thick journal, who must have precedents and previously documented material to fall back on. With Arago being unprecedented, the job remained as difficult as ever. Dr. Pires, who unquestionably had probed deeper into the mystique of Arago than any other Brazilian, had searched long and hard among the medical and psychiatric professions to try to bridge the gap between the rational and the inexplicable. His travels brought him in contact with Dr. Maria Pedroso, a psychiatric physician at the municipal hospital in São Paulo, and formerly assistant professor of legal medicine at the Medical School of the University of Brazil. She was internationally known, and had represented Brazil at the International World Convention of University Women. Dr. Pedroso had participated in a study of university women in the United States, and been a forerunner in Brazil for women at EMS rights. Her long list of credits included the vice presidency of the Pan-American Alliance of Women Doctors. She had practiced psychiatry for over 20 years in both São Paulo and Rio de Janeiro. She was most interested in the correlation between the paranormal and psychic abnormality. The moment she arrived at Arrigo's TMS clinic, she noticed that Arrigo turned and stared at her. Still looking straight at her, he said, "Anyone who is a doctor here, come forward at TM." Dr. Pedroso, startled at the uncanny perception of Arrigo, stayed in her place. Then he pointed his finger directly at her, and asked her to come close and observe from where she could see in detail. She did so. The operation was another trigium, at which he excelled. She was shocked at the violent movements made in the eye of a conscious patient, and at the lack of antisepsis. She was further shocked when the scissors seemed too dull to cut. She was thinking to herself that the crude strokes of the scissors would tear the tissues of the eye beyond repair. She also thought that if only he had a sharper instrument, there might be some hope. At that moment, Arrigo asked for a scalpel. He cut through the webbed structure, and the eye began to bleed profusely. She saw it flood down the cheek, and waited for 198, it to drench the patient a TMS shirt. The blood stopped exactly at the point of his lower jaw. There was no physical reason why it didn't a TMT flood over the jaw and down to his chest. The operation a success. Arrigo swabbed the eye with dirty cotton, and called for the next patient. To Dr. Pedroso's TMS utter surprise, he wiped the bloody scalpel on the blouse of the next patient, but the blouse did not show any stain. I was satisfied, and it was clear at TM, Dr. Pedroso said, that my drip was not wasted at TM. After watching several other operations at close range, plus the prescription procedure, she pondered long and hard about her experience. She found herself forced to conclude that Arrigo showed evidence of paranormal manifestations, without any doubt. She agreed with Richer, Janet, Freud, and others that there is no organic substratum in a living individual that could be looked on as a center for paranormal functions. Yet she had to accept the theory that there is an element beyond the normal in an undetermined location. In some individuals this would come out either spontaneously or under stimulation. Her technical rationalization was complex. She told Dr. Pyers, there are great silent zones in the brain which could possibly be the center of paranormal activities. The nerve cells are not inherent but adherent to the fibrillary. These act as batteries and distributors of potential energy. There are also magnetic and electrical forces at work within the atom. There are many forces that work on the central nervous system, either for good or for bad, that affect its protoplasm, by cohesion, electivity, or pressure. These can cause mechanical changes of the structure of the nervous system, which in turn affects the physiological basis of intrinsical associations. In doing so, either conscious or unconscious psychic phenomena would be included at TM. It seemed that anywhere anyone turned to try to explain Arrigo, the attempt at an answer was hard to follow or believe, whether the effort came from a religious, spiritist, legal, or scientific source. The only thing all points of view agreed on was that Arrigo's TMS work was a cold, realistic fact. Perhaps Dr. Oswaldo Conrado, the cardiology specialist from São Paulo, summed up the most interesting attitude 199, from the point of view of the medical profession when he said, if doctors were able to open up new hope for patients, it would be a wonderful experience. When I find that I am directly confronted with a hopeless case, and when every possible medical avenue is closed, I see no reason not to look for other means. We wouldn't TMT be human if we didn't TMT. Other facts about Arrigo exist. They have happened, simply and naturally. A commission of scientists, free from preconceived ideas, must study him, and study him thoroughly. We might be on the edge of discovering entirely new and extremely beneficial therapeutic resources at TM. As frustrated as they were, The North American researchers agreed substantially with this premise. They formulated plans with the Brazilian doctors to follow up on their incomplete data, but with the conviction that it would be necessary to come back to Congonhas do Campo as soon as possible for a concerted effort. The best hope for this lay in the establishing of Arrigoa TMS Dream, a fully equipped hospital run by competent physicians and surgeons under whose observation he would be able to work free from the intrusions of either the press or the courts. It was a glorious dream because it would combine the best possible combinations, scientific and metaphysical, psychological and physical, religious and secular, practical and idealistic, shadow and substance, sickness and health, all amounting to a fusion of compatible paradoxes. And, as some thought, that is what life consists of. As the Americans prepared to leave S.A. Tilda Poundo Paulo for New York, there were signs in the air that the dream might be fulfilled. The Medical Society of Minas Gerais was softening, and markedly so. The Catholic Church had taken cognizance of the North American team at TMS invasion of Congonhas, and was giving the potential of psychic healing a new look. It was even rumored that there were training courses in healing established in the monastery high in the mountains surrounding Congonhas that would compete with Arrigo. Gabriel Cater, the journalist, was pushing hard to raise funds for the hospital. Puharich and his group 200 made plans to try to raise money in the States for the same cause. The last thing Arrigo wanted was to be alienated from the church. He believed in the Christian ethic, and shared Arletea TMS almost obsessive devotion to the Catholic rites. In the courts, his lawyers had emphasized that he was bringing his children up in the best Catholic tradition, that he put Christ above everything else. Only his almost demonic compulsion to heal the suffering and help the poor kept him from giving up his healing work. This compulsion had been described as an obsessional neurosis, total psychosis, inspired evangelicalism, saintliness, profiteering, egocentricity, political machination, venality, nay tilde Macron vete tilde copyright, braggadocio, divine love, stupidity, charity, consummate skill, deviltry, unqualified citizen concern, black magic, sacrilege, pathological compulsion, humanism, and celestial skill. But there was no one who could say what Arrigo really was. It is doubtful if he knew himself. Arrigo went back to his routine, the Americans returned to their more worldly jobs. There would be nearly a year of sorting even the incomplete statistics they had assembled. Reviewing the color films of Arrigoa TMS surgery taken by the medical team, Dr. Robert Laidlaw, director of psychiatry at New York TMS Roosevelt Hospital, screened the footage several times. It was thought his expertise might bring a fresh viewpoint to the research. He was a meticulous man, and he wrote a careful report of his observations. 1. Arrigoa TMS facial expression when he operates differs completely from that of his normal demeanor. During an operation, there is a trance-like serenity seen in both his eyes and face. 2. It is important to notice the precision with which his fingers work, especially in a delicate eye operation. They keep working in this extremely sensitive area, even when his head and eyes are turned away in another direction. 3. The movement of his fingers is extraordinarily fast. He uses a knife with extreme confidence and precision. 201. 4. None of the patients have submitted to any preoperative preparation. It is very odd that the conscious patients are completely calm, relaxed, and indicate no fear whatever, yet they have received neither tranquilizers nor anesthesia. There is no expression of tension, no muscular tension. The patients don't attempt to even move. They remain impassive. 5. There is very little blood coming out of the body. Almost nothing. There are no stitches. The edges of the incision seem to glue together. In the two lipomy operations, the incisions bind together immediately, with practically no bleeding. 6. It is documented that the knife used by Arrigo was unsterile. There should be massive post-operation infection. But I understand this has never been reported. Many of the surgical routines observed cannot be done by highly trained surgeons. 7. The evidence shown in these films defies any explanation in terms of orthodox science. Dr. Laidlaw TMS observations were echoed by many members of various medical associations that Dr. Puharich showed the films to on his return to the United States. With the problems now anticipated and correctable, he was seeking support for another expedition to Brazil, convinced that Arago needed a lifetime of organized research and study.